Okay? Now that's serious for a lot of reasons, one of which is that the horse is having a little trouble in the gate. Now, if that is an isolated instance, it could be because Bob Purdy was the handler in the gate and had a bet on another horse and he's holding him a little tight. No, but it could have been that kind of an incident, all right? But the race before, here's the same horse out of the gate hopping into the air, which is also serious.
What happens then? I know
exactly what it says.
They jump out of the gate.
They literally hop out. Yeah. They almost prop when they come out. Okay? Now, those two races are back-to-back. Had the hop in the air happened and then the horse come back, I might have played it the second time. But with both of those races back-to-back, I wouldn't have touched the horse. He probably won his next start. No, he didn't. He was off form at that. He did win his next start, but he was laid off for 4 months. Okay. So that's a sign he's declining also. And apparently with Cracksman, you can spot decline in this horse by his unwillingness to go into the gate or to handle the start, either way. Are those clear, you know, as to when you can excuse them, how serious they might be, what to do with that? Anybody have anything else they want to add here?
What is rank early?
That means that the rider can't control a horse, rate the horse. That's what happened to Masterful Advocate last week. When Pinkay grabbed him out of the gate to put him behind the pace, the horse started fighting him. He became rank. Okay.
And it's not only associated with
maidens. Oh, no.
Experienced horses can't just want to run and the jockey can't.
Sure, you just make them
mad. Yeah, then we start fighting the handler. We had one, I was at the races the other day, and although Steepbank ran super, and I was out there with Jim Quinn, as a matter of fact, and when the gate opened, so I'm a name dropper. I didn't mention his name yesterday, though. Anyway. Sorry about that. Palm Springs in the villa. Anyway. Out of the gate, Shoemaker grabbed hold of Steepbank for good reason, because River of Kings and another horse were going to go out in 22 and something, 45 and 3, and I think 109.3 or something like that, and they just committed suicide up front. Well, Shoemaker grabbed Steepbank, who usually sits right on the pace. When he grabbed Steepbank, the horse began to fight him, and he got a little bit rank. Then he settled down, and he ran a really good race. And then Palastiglio came out of the clouds to beat him. But the point is, he was rank early in that race.
I don't know how to feel about when the line says that a horse was placed third, fourth, second, whatever, because it's qualification. I don't know.
That just means that somebody that finished in front of the horse was disqualified from a placement and placed behind him. This horse then was moved up to third or so. The horse may not have even been interfered with. The horse that might have been, that caused it, might have caused interference to a horse that finished, say, fifth. And your horse finished third without any incident at all. But when this horse comes down, he's placed below the horse that caused the interference to him. So now he's down here somewhere, and you got promoted to second. You can't, I mean, that's just a comment on what the final placement was. It's not a comment on what happened to your horse.
Cracksman, the 6th January race, he's got a comment down here, why did the final 3/8? I'm not aware that there's a beginning 3/8 and a final 3/8.
The final 3/8 of the race. The last 3/8.
That's right. What that means is on this board, on this board, who he keeps taking down prematurely, he's stuck wide here and goes all the way to the finish that way. In other words, they don't get over here and he's not able to get in anywhere. Of course, once they straighten out, it's no problem. But he's wide all the way then.
I have some questions about conditions or off track, whatever you call it. I just wanted to be clear, when you're looking at a pace and it says slow, sloppy, good, or whatever it is, are you basically saying that when you're trying to figure out should you use that pace line, you should try to look at when he runs fast and see does he run particularly better when the track is slow or sloppy?
Yeah, you've got to evaluate in the light of the way he normally runs. And I have a suggestion for you, and I'm going to suggest this a little later on one of the horses that you're going to deal with in the exercise. When you have a horse like, let's look at West Boy for just a moment on 45, and look at the race on January 9th in which he won that. What I would suggest in this incident, when you have a winner on a slow track or a heavy track or a good track, to draw a line through that particular race. Just draw a line through it. And then search through this and see if you can make the horse win with another line. Now, in the case of West Boy II, you can certainly do that. Okay, so the slow track didn't affect him one way or the other. If, on the other hand, you draw a line through that slow track win and you can't make him win, then he moved way up on that off track. And if today is a fast track, you don't want any part of the horse. And you will often see that a horse wins off by himself on an off track, and yet if you were to just put your hand over that particular race and look at all the other races he has currently, horse won't be able to win for you.
On the other hand, when it's rained and you're about to go to the track and you have a feeling that the track will be good or something,
right,
it won't be fast, then when you're picking a pace line, should you try to look for pace lines that's going to be the same as the day you're going, or?
I'll tell you what I prefer to do. I prefer to use current pace lines on the horse and then check that out as to whether he can run on a slow track or not. Because the slow tracks, even with a variant calculation that would adjust for that, are often really screwy. So if you give him that slow track number and you give everybody else a number off of a fast track, they'll often not measure up anyway. So you might just well use a current race on a dry track and then say he can handle the off track and this one can't. So I'd stay with current form and then evaluate whether or not he'll be able to handle this off track. Now, if on the other hand that was his current race or his second race back, then you might be able to do that. But in the case of West Boy, if it's off, you want him. If it's dry, you want him. During that period, he was running very well.
When you're dealing with a contender and it has one of those little asterisks next to it saying it's a superior mud runner, and, I mean, when you're looking at your horses, you're kind of worried because you know that if there's a horse in there that really kicks butt on a sloppy day.
But that's a push for you. Hurricane Heck, for example, is a superior mudder. He's got Superior Mud, which is an X, right? And he's got a circle to say he's even better than that. All right. The only problem is that some of these horses earn these things at an early time in their career, and by the time you're really looking at them, they hate the mud now. Okay. So you're best off with this. What's in front of you here? These 10 races.
Also, the mud mark is given by whoever the chart crawler is that day. If he sees a horse run a good race in the mud, it's his decision. And he may be out of his mind when he gives the horse a mud mark, but he'll be stuck with that mud mark for the rest of his life.
The answer is
to these mud marks.
The answer is to virtually all of your questions, which are excellent questions, are inherent in what we're going to be doing for the rest of the day. In other words, when you look at the matchup, you're going to say, regardless of the condition of the track, you're going to find out whether sloppy meant that it affected the horse, or good meant it affected, or slow meant it affected. Was that just a designation by the man upstairs in the booth, or was it a really, did it affect the pace of the race? The matchup is what we're going to be using to determine whether slow, good, fast, sloppy, etc., really affected it, and whether we should use another line or adjust that line. Because they're very good questions, but they cannot be answered categorically by slow, sloppy, good, because they're purely personal designations. The track will always say it's fast if they can, because it gets more action. And good sometimes is just as, runs the same times as fast, and sometimes way more sustained. More often than it runs, it changes the early and late balance of a race than it does the actual race itself. And that is very important. If you take a track, take the horse who's normally a front runner, and you take it on a day when he apparently ran sustained, you have to know the condition of the track, which is, of course, what the Brohammer model is all about. So we'll get into that. Let me start going through the X's and O's just for a second here so you can, when you're doing these races today, be able to properly utilize them. Tom says that he would have given that horse a plus because it was a seven horse field or a six horse field, and he finished. Yeah, but he finished very close. Finished within. The problem is that if you're going to make in this kind of a thing, you're going to make a designation 4.75 lengths, or first, second, or third. Is a plus. If you want to say that you won't accept that and change it, change the definition by all means, but remember what your definition of plus and zero is so that you're not changing your definition.
Just a slight upgrade to that would be finishing the top half of the field at 4.75.
Yeah,
now for me that would be an upgrade to that rule.
Change it to that then, but whatever you change it to, stick with it. This works. I'm sure that would work even better. Because beating half the field is a criterion used by a lot of people who have demonstrated that their authority is good. Okay, if you want to make plus, good race, ran with some promise, finished in the money, or within 4.75 lengths, and or beat half the field. You can change that if you want to. probably is a good addition. Zero is a poor effort throughout. The horse did not qualify with good early, good anything, good close, no outstanding fractions, just ran a dull, bad race. Now, the new designation that's in here, it was not in that free issue of the follow-up. We already knew about this, but we weren't going to give it away free. is an X within an O. And throughout today's races, you'll see a lot of X's within an O's. Here's a horse who finishes 9 lengths off, does very, very badly in a route, but if at the second call was within 3 lengths, with the first fraction was within 2, ran very well early. Contrary-wise, you might find a horse that had trouble or didn't do anything, but closed in 23.2. And when you close in under 24, you're not just chasing tired speed, you're showing something. So a horse that had an exceptionally fast close or ran well position-wise or velocity-wise early gets a plus within an O. You'll see a lot of those examples. For instance, we changed some of those that was in were in the follow-up, starting on page 36. I put them together so you can see the difference. Look at Olympic, where he originally got a zero for finishing fourth by 5 lengths. He now gets a plus within a zero because he was in a length and a quarter, or a length and a half, I guess it is, at the second call. Similarly, in the bottom two races on Eliminate, he goes from a zero to a plus within a zero because he showed excellent early. Lord of the Wind, who had a bad last race apparently because he finished 8th, 15 and a quarter lengths out, gets a plus within a zero because on the turf race there he was only went from 2.5 to 4 lengths out and then started going badly. See the difference between a flat-out zero and a plus within a zero. A plus within a zero is a great sign for you to, because the public's not going to make that designation. They're going to look at the final. Public is speed happy. They're final time happy. Public doesn't even know where the second fraction is. You want to get into an argument at a racetrack, get somebody real big with muscle structure, go with you and stand real close, and say, "Hey, buddy," and he's talking about, "See that, the second, what's the difference between a second fraction and a second call? Ain't no difference, man. What are you talking about, second, huh?" They don't know where the second fraction. They don't know the second fraction is the difference, that little interval between the first fraction and the second call. It's totally not within the minds of most race goers. Now, the third fraction, they're beginning to catch on to, because that's where they close, man. That's the stretch run. They know how to subtract a second call from the final time to figure out how fast it closed. They can see the first fraction, because it's there. They can see the second call. So what's still left to us that's totally hidden is the second fraction. So if you see a good second fraction, a good turn time in a horse, where he recovers from whatever his problems in the first fraction were, and he makes a good move there, you can see it immediately. Give it a plus within an O. Sure. But one at a time.
Would you give him a plus within an O if you're... Does it make any difference what type of race that you're handicapping? In other words, a horse runs good first two fractions and then trails off evenly, but you're handicapping a mile and a 16th.
Even at one heck of a sprint.
What value would that be in a mile and a 16th?
Tremendous value. It shows that that shows it for what? Three quarters of a mile, mile 16th is over half the race. For over half the race, he was a terrific horse. He just came up short. Now, if he gets those, he gets 10 of those in a row, and he never run, and the trainer hasn't got enough brains to put him in a sprint, then you might start discounting him as a router. But early speed in a last effort, anywhere in the race, at any distance, is very significant statistically in what the horse will do in the next race out. It tells you that you can go back if it's a route race, and he has done well at routes before. It tells you that in pace line selection, which is what we're talking about essentially, you can now go back to a better route race than that one where he tailed off. But if he always tails off in a route race, it's a horse is begging for a sprint. Wait till he goes into a sprint, and then you get 20-1 on him. That's the time to bet him. You understand our alternate sprint to route method? How to? Okay, and you, sir.
Lord of the Wind on his last race, I know we don't use the third call, but according to the third call here,
from the second to the third, he lost seven lengths. Do you place any significance on that big a drop in that short period?
Lord of the Wind in his last race. Well, he lost.
He went from 4 lengths to 11 lengths. Is that?
And he continued.
We have a stretch call program. We use it for experiment. He significantly lost ground on that turf race against the 1:10 and 4. I'll tell you what this race is telling you. This horse cannot run against a 1:10 and 4. He will try for a while and fall off. But he does very well against a 1:12 and 2. That's the matchup. If he's going to face a 1:10 and 4 today, all things being equal, you're going to say, hey, I don't have to worry about that horse. I can throw him out. That's one of the things we're going to go into pretty heavily. Contrary-wise, when Dansabel can keep up for a three-quarters of a mile as a good sprinter at a 1:10 and 4 route pace, but can win against a 1:12 and 3. So you see, it's a matchup. Every time it's run at the 1:10 and things, look what it's done. It's gone well for 2-3 calls and bang. I call the third call a stretch call in this case.
Lord of the Wind, how do you know that's not the trainer prepping the horse for another race, and he just wants to get him
warmed
up the first part of the race and not burn him out?
His last race?
Because he's never done well against that kind of, he's never shown that he can run against that kind of an early fraction. The horse that set the pace in that race, the trainer can't, he's not going to tell the horse that if he can't run against a 1:10 and 4, he's not going to say, yes, today I'm going to train you to run against a 1:10 and 4. But look at his past performance. Where has he done well?
In fact, that's Louisiana Gals doesn't mean anything.
Oh, that's where Brohammer's, the concept of making yourself some part-time charts, or generic part-time charts, or subscribing to Quirin's. Even though they're not totally accurate, at least they're almost uniformly inaccurate, so that it's the same as being accurate. You could, no, I'm serious. If he's wrong universally, at least he'll tell you the relationship between Louisiana Downs and Santa Anita by his part times. But still, ask Woody Stevens about these track variants and everything. He'll tell you, hey, 1:10's a good time, whether it's at Aqueduct, Santa Anita, Louisiana Downs, or certain times are good times. Don't run too fast, too early, in other words. Maybe it could have overcome a 1:10 and 4 if it had stayed back 8 lengths. Maybe the 1:10 and 4 horse, we don't know who won, we can't tell what the pace time was of the winner there because we don't have Rising Chum's race. But generally speaking, you've got to allow for 2/5 here, 2/3. You can't dunk it allow for 2 seconds for Louisiana. Louisiana Downs, if you get to know these tracks, we do. I don't want to take unfair advantage of you. We know the difference between the tracks, and sometimes that we don't do that. But I'll tell you how I learned to do it. We get clients all over the United States, and they all send us a lot of information. But Quirin's charts are $3 a track. And if you just want to get relationships between tracks, it's very well worth your while to see what second call time is for winners, the various tracks. And even out of his book, even though those are far back, the relationships are still about the same. You'd be amazed. Part times at Hollywood have changed, part times Santa Anita, everything's changed, but the relationships are still about the same. But that's the theory, and it works. It's one theory that translates into fact and procedure. I don't know whether it's because the X's, or you ask me, how do you interpret them after you get them? Well, in some horses you can see a 1-2 bad, 1 good. You can see a cyclic thing. But are you going to say because he had 2 bad and 1 good 3 times in a row that means the next one's going to be bad or good? What it tells you really is, every time I see a good race on a horse, where was he? What was he doing? What were the situations that caused it? Look at take any one of these races that got X's and O's on it as you go through the thing. Go on to, well, look at Cracksman, for instance, on page 44. And you say, my gosh, the horse wins at 40, 40, and he does well at all these levels. Even if you wanted to make a serious case for an O on the third race back. He has never had less than an 84 speed rating. He has six straight pluses. You can almost take any race you want to use him as a pace line, because, and so therefore take the most recent, because it's, you know, why delve? But the horse is always predictable in six straight starts, with the exception of one start for Superb Moment. You have pluses. Now, what does that tell you about Superb Moment? Where did it get its zero? Okay. It tells you that it probably is not going to be a winner at 40,000. That kind of, watch out. The horse may do well, but it's not necessarily going to win at 40,000. When you look to see where you see the pluses, all the horse's pluses are at 16,000, and every time it tries to go above 16,000, it gets an O, and it's going above 16,000 today, what is it telling you? Cyclically, the horse does not do well at above 16,000. Look at what does it tell you about quadrata on page 46? Recent form cycle. Where did it have an O? It had double plus in its last race, a plus before that, and then an O and preceded by a plus. What did it get the O on? That answers the young lady's question. You see that sort of a situation, you say, this horse does not like the mud. I wouldn't want to. It does very well in fast track at a given distance. See all pluses next to sprints and all O's next to routes, you can pretty well figure that horse is not once doesn't want a route. If you see all pluses within circles when at the sprint distance of routes, but the horse never finishes well at routes, you say he's dying for a sprint. Please, trainer, put him in a sprint. I want to get him at 20-1. If you don't put those X's and O's there, unless you have a kind of a Brohammer mind or a Purdy mind who remembers these things anyway, this gives you a tip off, and you can say, hey, he's at plus within an O every time he goes to a mile 16 at that sprint distance, and he dies.
Verdict. It took the horse seven races to win his maiden. Obviously, to me, the last baseline would be the last one. Do you consider a horse like that?
No, but you just showed why a good reason not to consider him. Yeah. See, the problem is to be able to throw a horse out, you have to consider him first to get rid of him. It's like not believing in God. In order to be an atheist, you've got to recognize the existence of God in order to deny God. Well, in order to get rid of a horse, you've got to recognize its existence to get rid of it. So that's how he got rid of it. And you have just used the X's and O's correctly. I think we can get, before Schmidt comes on, we can, this one race right here that's on 45 will give us a very quick and down and dirty sample of how to use the matchup. You initially are looking for a pace line. By using your old processes, you're looking at a horse going into a $40,000 claiming, and if you're not going to throw West Boy out, West Boy 2 on page 45 out, as a result of class, he's 66% of purse, you're going to say, yeah, but look here, he's got three wins, five or seven, three wins, I think, in a second. Pretty good. You can say, yeah, but, and I don't blame you. Can I throw that horse out alone in class? Okay. Say you don't throw him out on class and you want to qualify him. I'm going to ask you to tell me, this is a sprint, 6.5 furlongs. Look at the time of the second call of West Boy's wins and tell me what they were. Never mind that he broke slowly. He always breaks slowly. And what does he run? How has he run against 45? Well, he ran against a 44 and 2, but so you got to count that second by a head. 45. Okay. He's got to be able to turn in a good 45 and 2. He can win against a 45. He can come in second against a 44 and 2 once. He can win against a 45 and 4. He can win against a 45 and 3. So what's the average? What's about as fast as you can anticipate that he can win against? 45. You're going to give them the benefit of all the doubt and say 45, right? Does anybody question that? He could win against a 45 second call because he came in second against a 44 and 4 once, but most all the others have been 45 or more. Is everybody following this procedure? That's what he needs to win a race.
Look at that. I would look at the fact that he ran against allowance competition in the last race with 44-2 in the second call, but he was 15 lengths out.
Right.
Well, that, I'm just talking about where he finished well. Yeah. We know he can. We know he's not an allowance horse, but we know that he's not a $40,000 claimer ever, but so what? We overlooked that. That's the way Jim Quinn and Brohammer would immediately throw him up. But the yabbers are going to say, yeah, but look at those, how he closes. And if this is a setup for a closer, he's the one, isn't he? Is he? We ask ourselves, let's answer that question by seeing what has he closed against. The best he's ever closed against, if you average them out, if you take the exception of the fact of that at 44-2 on the 14 daily variant, whatever that was that day, which is actually was a 12 daily variant if you use your power generator, that's about a 45 is what he needs to have any chance to win, right? Does anybody, would that not be the reasoning you would come up with if I weren't here? If he gets a 45 today, okay, what's he going to get? He's got a 44 and 4 the horse runs right on the pace with. He's got a 44 and 2 that a horse wins against him. So you got a horse that wins against a 44 and 4 with regularity. 44 and 1 he's within a half a length. These are fast, early pace horses he's running against. Cracks win at Superb Moment. And not just once, but regularity. Plus the fact they've got the class. They're 88 and 93% at purse.
Beyond that, too, if you calculate West Boy's final fraction, those horses that are well in front of him also come home as fast as he does.
Yeah.
He's really up against it.
And that's the next step you want to take.
About 24-4, and Craxman can do that after running 44-4, 45.
Fast early that he can't compete with? Who closes as fast as he does when he's got an easy pace? He's got two strikes against him. And the class has got to make three. So what happens after three strikes? Who says I'm have a single mind I can talk baseball with? That is now just do that with in every field of contention. Just match them up. What's the pace going to be today? We're going to do one spectacular race on that subject. In fact, we'll do it, and then we'll let Dick come up. No sense in changing microphones all the time. This one I was rather trepidatious about getting into yesterday with Tom here, because as the purist, Don does not like too much these flights of fancy where you contrive pace lines and do things using intuition and Brad Sharring under the Oklahoma hat matchups, but he approved of this. So we can use it today without fear of reprisal. And it's on page what? Huh? This is a little thing that we were working on. This is ironic that when Dick was working on his part of this manual and I was working on, we both had races from the same days, and the race the three he's going over I was going to put in as well, and when I found out he was going to do it, it saved me the effort. But the whole thing started off with a phone call on March 27th. I got three of them from the San Francisco Bay Area. And the general cry was, the X's and O's have struck again. Stock and Trade won and paid $32. And the Place Horse paid $8.40. Gallant Shooter. And that was $2 exact, $2, $166.80. And it was a tandem race. Just about four aspects of the methodology gelled in one race where the winner pays $32.